So we talked about it all last week. Once there was a deal to avert a government shutdown, the next big milestone on the road to fiscal clarity in Washington was going to be the question of whether to raise the debt ceiling.
Wait,
or not.
The end of all this is fiscal clarity?
Well, that's what they,
totally worth it.
That's what they claim they're headed towards, or at least some sort of fiscal responsibility reduction of the deficit. And the president will lay out his blueprint for reducing the deficit, expected to mention entitlements. But behind all of this is the question of when Congress will, and it's expected to happen sometime in May when the debt ceiling will be reached. That means the amount of borrowing that the government has taken out exceeds the statutory limit that Congress sets periodically. That will happen in May. Congress will have to vote to raise it. It will become a political football if we're to believe any of the statements of politicians coming out of Washington. Joining us now is Kenneth Rogoff, professor of economics at Harvard and former chief economist at the International Monetary Fund. He's the author of This Time is Different, Eight Centuries of Financial Folly. Folly, we hope we're not continuing in the tradition of here in the United States this morning. He joins us from Cambridge. Professor, good morning.
Greetings.
Let's talk a little bit about the default question. If there is no debt ceiling raise and the U.S. government does not have the cash to pay debt obligations, who holds the paper that suddenly becomes worthless, and how does that ripple through the economy?
Well, the U.S. Treasury bills and bonds obligations of the U.S. government are held all over the world. Certainly money market funds, banks hold them, but also the Chinese and the Middle East and Latin America. And it's just unthinkable that we just suddenly, because we don't feel like it, stop paying it. I'm not saying a default could never happen, but a capricious one, one that occurs out of brinkmanship, not out of necessity, would simply undermine the world system in ways, layman times 100.
All right, let's talk about the details. If there is an actual default, would it mean certain obligations dated, say, 2011 or 2030 would not be honored, or does it affect all of the Treasury notes simultaneously?
Well, it potentially affects everything. It's really whatever the capricious government decides to do.
Uh-huh.
So right now, there's a budget, the deficit ceiling, and we plan to spend $1 trillion more than we take in taxes. The reason we default is we'd quickly run out of options, and so we'd stop paying our creditors. How we do that would depend on what we felt like. So governments do default more often than you might think, and hundreds of times over the centuries. And it's just a free-for-all when they decide they can do anything they like. It certainly would cause a panic in markets way beyond the U.S. Treasury market. I could imagine banks freezing up, breakdowns of stock markets, and certainly if it lasted for more than a day or two, jobs, trade, everything. But boy, when you're the biggest borrower in the world and you shake up foreigners like that, we're very dependent on them for some of our borrowing. It's not going to be a pretty picture
In terms of consumers, Kenneth Rogoff of Harvard, would that mean interest rates would rise and inflation would be almost an immediate result?
It's so bad. It's almost interest rates would rise. You wouldn't necessarily even be able to borrow in this situation. It'd be a panic. It's very hard to predict the course it would take. But yes, it would be hard to get money. People just wouldn't know how to make contracts if the U.S. government debt wasn't good. At the end of the day, the dollar is the gold standard that underpins everything. So,
He's like staggering around his office there in Cambridge going,
Ken Rogoff, professor of economics at Harvard, co-author of This Time is Different, Eight Centuries of Financial Folly. But Ken, to a certain extent, you can probably appreciate why someone would want to make a stand. Barack Obama himself, as a senator, voted against raising the debt ceiling. He says it's because he was trying to bring out about a serious conversation on reducing the deficit. So if they don't have that conversation associated with borrowing when it comes into the debt ceiling, how does one bring that about?
Well, it's true that it's very hard for a country to get itself off an unsustainable debt path, which we are on. We eventually will end up defaulting if we keep on like this, not because we don't feel like it, but because others won't give us money. But it's hard. How serious a conversation are we going to have in this situation? I mean, they're going to come up with some little patches. It's good. There are serious things being said in Washington. The government shutdown was nothing compared to this. I mean,
right.
That was actually manageable for a few months. This is far worse, in fact, than the government shutdown. So, yes, a conversation we applaud. And I think the Gang of Six, the Fiscal Commission, mm-hmm. has said very good things. And President Obama hopefully will say good things today. And I give Representative Ryan credit for at least viewing the problem holistically.
And putting Medicare and Medicaid on the table. All right, just a little less than a minute to go here. Two concrete issues. One, what would it take beyond the rhetoric that you've already referred to really reassure the world that we're not actually going towards default? What would have to happen between now and the end of the year? And is it possible that somewhere in some market somewhere there's like a credit default swap that is betting on a default?
Well, one of the world's biggest bond funds has gone short U.S. government debt.
Get
because
out.
They're concerned about it. But the rest of the world, by and large, is not that concerned. If they were, our interest rates would have shot through the roof already. They just said, you know, this is family bickering. You're going to settle this.
And if they're wrong?
they're
just trying to scare
them.
Well, no, because what you've described is that there's one hedge fund or something that is betting short on treasury obligations. That's just sort of one voice, but everyone else is going, oh, they'll figure it out. Even if we don't default, if there's a proliferation of voices that say, you know, hey, maybe they won't, that will affect us, right?
Yeah, I mean, if people get scared that it really could happen someday, suddenly all interest rates, mortgages, everything across the board will go up simply because of a small fear that it might happen.
So the scariest thing we have to fear is fear itself.
And ourselves.
Kenneth Rogoff, speaking very much like a 21st century FDR, professor of economics at Harvard and former chief economist at the International Monetary Fund 2001 to 2003. He's the co-author of This Time is Different, 8 Centuries of Financial Folly, a book that may need to be updated after the month of May. Thank you, professor.
Thank you.
This is Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, the Science Friday team has been reporting high-quality science and technology news, making science fun for curious people by covering everything from the outer reaches of space to the rapidly changing world of AI to the tiniest microbes in our bodies. Audiences trust our show because they know we're driven by a mission to inform and serve listeners first and foremost with important news they won't get anywhere else. And our sponsors benefit from that halo effect. For more information on becoming a sponsor, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.